More of Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times.
And good afternoon. Welcome back to hour number two. It's 12:06 and 12:60 WRC. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And look who it is, ladies and gentlemen, in studio. A rare appearance by the one and only Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Andy.
Happy Friday to you. Powder keg. Russia puts 80,000 troops outside Ukraine. That's the headline. I guess that finally got the attention of those on Capitol Hill. Why now? The troop number's a little higher than they thought?
Yeah, they are. You know, and this is, it's a little bit controversial. There's been some questions about American intelligence and how good our assessments have been of the situation over there. And so this caught some members of the Armed Services Committee in the House by surprise. The previous assessments had been about 30,000 troops. At least that's what the Russians had admitted to. And they said they were there for training exercises.
Uh-huh.
Now, all of a sudden, we members of Congress were told in private briefings this week that it was 80,000 troops. We're even hearing potential estimates as many as 100,000.
Wow.
But, you know, so whatever it is, 80,000, 100,000, that's a lot more than you would need for your spring exercises that just happen to be right there on the border of Ukraine. So it's got everybody afraid, and, it helped kick them into gear. They'd been moving towards this legislation, obviously, for a couple of weeks, but it's the sort of thing where it's not just the troops amassed. It's obviously a very real fear that Putin believes that we're not doing very much to keep him out of Crimea. In fact, we've essentially admitted he has that, and it's going to be, we don't have any levers to pull to get him out of there.
Yeah.
What happens if he tries Ukraine next? You know, people a lot smarter than me go through all the different options there and say that there are Russian-speaking minorities and in those areas in eastern Ukraine that he could claim he was trying to protect, just like he did with Crimea, where he might choose to invade and to send in. Crimea was always a somewhat unique case in an autonomous zone there within Ukraine.
Yeah.
Though Russia, obviously, under the after the Soviet Union dissipated, Russia had agreed in these accords to turn it over under all these conditions and whatnot. And that's obviously what Russia has now broken there. Going into the eastern Ukraine would be, in some way, you know, it's awful. Going into Crimea is bad. Going into eastern Ukraine would be even worse, because that's not even an area that there was dispute over back decades ago, all that.
All right, so Harry Reid got what he wanted, some action. Backing of Ukraine's loans. What about the IMF stuff you and I talked about?
Yeah, so the IMF provisions are not in here.
Oh.
And that's what ended up clearing the way for this earlier this week, was when Harry Reid decided he was not going to insist on that, partly because he had opposition from his own party within the House. House Democrats, some very high-profile House Democrats, said, look, I may want the IMF stuff done, but that's getting in the way of us making a statement about Ukraine. Let's go ahead and do it. The crazy thing about this, though, and why Congress still isn't exactly on the same page. So yesterday, both the House and Senate voted for about $1 billion in U.S. loan guarantees and voted to codify essentially the sanctions that Obama's already used on Russian officials, but they both passed different bills, slightly different bills. So we still don't even have a single bill to send to the president. Hopefully there's a chance they'll get that done today, even though both chambers are essentially gone from Washington. There are pro forma sessions where they may be able to get that done today, but it just shows they can't even do anything. They were literally both voting on almost exactly the same bills at the same time yesterday, but because they both were so eager to basically get out of town and not be here Friday and to get out of town early Thursday, they couldn't wait for one or the other to pass the bill and then send it over. They both wanted to pass their own bills and get out of here. So Ukraine still, you know, the president's not here, obviously, to sign the bill either. So it's not like it's a huge, huge, huge urgency. But still, it's just it's weird that they couldn't even get that arranged.
Well, any statement from Harry Reid, even if it was just a simple slam of the Koch brothers? I mean, did he? No?
No. I admit that's what we have been waiting for, is sort of the you put your finger on it. This, of course, is exactly what he held it up and said. The Koch brothers and Republicans were delaying aid to Ukraine. And, right, as you said, here we are. Harry Reid essentially tacitly admitted that he was the one doing the delay by withdrawing the IMF stuff.
Yeah. All right, now, we're really not done, because some lawmakers want the president to do more, right? They want military option. Well, military aid, I guess.
Military aid. Everybody at this point seems to say no American troops on the ground and no American air power, which is apparently different than American troops on the ground, as we saw with the commitment to Libya a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, right, there are folks who want to see American military aid, small arms and communications equipment given to Ukraine, which, of course, is badly outmatched by its Russian opponents. There's also a push to have sanctions slapped on a particular Russian arms firm, and the name is it's about 15 or 20 letters long in the English, so I'm not even going to try and
doesn't mean anything.
But it's a major Russian arms firm that does a ton of work with the Russian government, but also does some work. We apparently buy American military helicopters from it, and so if we were to sanction it, you know, that would deny it some American business. And there's a move to not just sanction it and to halt American contracts, but also sanction it so that, you know, other American businesses that do business with this company wouldn't be able to do that. And that would be a way of hurting a very important Putin company, essentially.
I gotcha. All right. Meanwhile, Condoleezza Rice blamed Obama for creating a foreign policy vacuum leading to problems like we're seeing today with Putin and Ukraine and Syria and some others. He had a very special speech at some function here in town.
Yeah, it was a National Republican Congressional Committee's annual fundraising dinner. And this is basically the campaign arm of House Republicans. And it's closed door, but we got a copy of the audio, and it was a very strong speech. It was a broad speech. You know, in her denials that she's not necessarily looking at running for president, sure sounded like a presidential campaign mm-hmm. speech to me. She ranged from going into the archives to look at the founding documents such as the Emancipation Proclamation and the Declaration of Independence, and how radical the Declaration of Independence, radically revolutionary the Declaration of Independence was. Translated that into why we should be supporting democracy movements overseas. Also translated that into a call for the Republican Party to take a softer line on immigration here at home. And translated that and the Constitution into a call for Republicans to be the party of school choice. So hit everything. Hit domestic issues, hit thorny things like immigration. But, you know, as you might expect from a former Secretary of State, chiefly did a defense of internationalism and some pushback against, the Rand Paul faction within the Republican Party. Yeah. And I'd say within the country at large, which would prefer to sort of let the world deal with its problems and we could focus on our American problem. She said, look, every time we've retrenched, every time we have decided we need to take care of America first, there becomes a vacuum in the world, and that vacuum is not filled by, we expect allies like the Europeans to fill that vacuum. It never happens. It's Syria that fills the vacuum, Bashar al-Assad that fills it, Putin that fills it, China that fills it. And so the U.S. needs to fill that vacuum, because nobody else will, nobody else good will.
You know, it's interesting you summarized her speech as being presidential in nature, and yet, as you mentioned, she has denied repeatedly that she wants any involvement. I'm wondering how much pressure she's getting behind the scenes to jump in, only because, you know, in my mind, she is the one person who could, I think, devastate Hillary Clinton in a head-to-head matchup.
Yeah, could you imagine having two female secretaries of state going at it in one day? It would be very interesting. The problem for Rice is that she does not match the Republican electorate particularly well. They wouldn't go so far as to say that she couldn't win the primary, because, you know, Republicans might decide that she is the best general election candidate and they're willing to put up with some of her areas where they don't agree with her. But she has, you know, she described herself to the Washington Times. This was a big scoop we had back when she was Secretary of State, when she was potentially maybe looking at a run back in the end of the Bush administration. She described herself as moderately pro-choice, which is a killer for mm-hmm. A Republican primary, as Rudy Giuliani found out, of course. The internationalist view that she has, it doesn't sit particularly well with Republicans right now. With the establishment, yes, but with base Republican voters, they do, we've polled on this, they do tend to be more of the Rand Paul style. They want us to have a more humble policy, just because, you know, what we saw with the Bush administration was tremendous spending. And that's, I admit that when I was listening to the tape of her remarks, which we obtained, you do get the sense that she's essentially talking about a third George W. Bush administration. And there's a reason why the Tea Party grew up and in opposition to that Bush administration. Yeah, yeah. I don't see her getting the nomination.
Yeah, good point. All right. Anything going on today, or did they bail?
They bailed.
Okay, this is Harry Reid earlier in the week is crying that we're going to be here. We're going to work through the weekend, and if it means that we don't get a...
He was warning they were going to work this weekend. They might be working next weekend, and he was even saying they might have to give up one of the 2 weeks of their two-week Easter vacation, and here we are. It's Friday, and they've been gone. No, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was driving in today talking with somebody and just sort of getting steamed over that. They have yet, neither chamber has worked a full Monday through Friday week yet this year. This was supposed to be the week. The House was never going to do but this was supposed to be the week that the Senate might actually do that, and they were done by yesterday afternoon and all gone. What a job. I really would love that.
How about the news this morning that Mike Rogers of Michigan is going to leave at the end of the year, and he's going to become a national radio talk show host.
Yeah, competition, Andy.
Yeah.
I'm not particularly surprised. He's been at the top of the Intelligence Committee for a long time. I actually don't know. He might even be term limited there, and that might have a lot to do with it. That's an intense position, and at some point you do need to move on.
Very good. I appreciate your help on all of this stuff. I know I throw darts at you sometime.
I try and take what you throw.
All right. We'll see you. Have a good weekend.
My pleasure, Andy.
Stephen Dinan, political editor here at the Washington Times. Tammy Bruce coming up next right here at 1260 WRC.